When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So that I do not like to spend my time or money in salons when I can help it. But I do enjoy a good manicure, and I especially enjoy spending time with my daughters doing the Olive and June Mani system at home, because we can all get a good looking manicure for around $2. We know that the polish won't chip and will last at least a full week. We get to await with anticipation the new colors that come out each season. The girls love being able to add some sparkles or choose whether they want their top coat to be matte or shiny. We just have a really good time together with salon grade tools that are so easily explained, so that we can do a really good job taking care of our nails, but do it all from the comfort at home. All the choices of a big salon stored in a basket in my closet for when we're ready to hang out together. The Olive and June Mani system is a real game changer. So visit oliveandjune.com/pantsuit for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/pantsuit for 20% off your first Mani system.
The Constitution and its amendments are the foundation of our democracy and the center point of so many controversies in American politics. We decided to take these important amendments one by one and go back to basics.
If freedom of speech and the right to bear arms are enshrined as fundamental values, we want to understand them on a deeper historical level. We put together this series on the amendments to do just that.
During America's colonial era, Britain passed many laws to increase its revenue collection. Americans felt oppressed and began to find ways around these taxes, including smuggling. The King of England took action and equipped British agents with a writ of assistance that gave them extremely broad powers to search a person and their property without permission. The Founding Fathers drew on those experiences and believed every person had a God-given right to be protected in their own home.
The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized.
Today, as the population increases, technology advances, and solving crimes becomes more complex, the question has been raised: how much is enough to warrant probable cause? Should Americans have to sacrifice their privacy for safety? And how far should law enforcement be allowed to go? Now more than ever, it is important to know and understand our rights. We as a nation cannot move forward unless we understand our past. This is Constitutional Primers.
There's a question about what the police can do to you when they pull you over. Can they pull you over for no reason?
It is now my honor to sign into law the USA Patriot Act of 2001.
But it's clear now that we didn't do enough to prevent these tools from being used for harm as well.
Does Google know that I was sitting here and then I moved over there?
I only send audio back to Amazon when I hear you say the wake word. For more information and to view Amazon's privacy notice, visit the help section of your Alexa app.
I'm here with Angela J. Davis. She is the editor of Policing the Black Man, Arrest, Prosecution, and Imprisonment. She is also a professor of law at American University's Washington College of Law and former head of the D.C. Public Defender Service. She's also my criminal law professor and taught me everything I know. Thank you so much for being here, Professor Davis.
Thank you for having me, Sarah.
We are so excited. We are going to walk through some of the criminal law constitutional amendments in an effort to better inform people above and beyond what they've picked up from Law and Order, which I think is an important public service. We're going to start with the Fourth Amendment, which I'm going to read. It is the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Now, that's a lot of language, but what I always tell people that you taught me, Professor Davis, is if the police ask if they can search you or your car, you say no. Doesn't matter. You just say no. Can you search? No. That's what I tell people, my number one lesson from law school.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it depends. That would be my instinct, I would say, to say no. But you have to use your judgment depending on who you are, where you are, the circumstances. But it's important to know that you have the right to say no. I think that's the important thing.
And I don't think people feel like that all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. This amendment doesn't say that you have the right to be free of all searches and seizures. It also doesn't say that a warrant is required. It says no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause. What it says is that you have the right to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures. And so the Supreme Court has gone through a whole bunch of cases that define what that means. You know, what is an unreasonable search and what is an unreasonable seizure? And it's also interpreted the amendment to basically mean that there's a presumption that there should be a warrant. But there's so many exceptions to that rule that a lot of people believe that the exceptions eat up the rules. So, like, for example, there's something called exigent circumstances. If it's an emergency situation, the cops come to a house and they hear guns going off in the house, then they don't have to run and go get a warrant. Why? Because it's an emergency, because someone could be hurt or harmed. Or if they think that someone's destroying evidence, if they come to a house and they believe someone is in the process of destroying evidence, if they went to get a warrant, by the time they got back, the evidence would be gone. So exigent circumstances is one of those exceptions. Another exception is consent. So if you consent to a search, you know, if the police say, hey, can I search your car? And you say yes, then of course they don't have to go and get a warrant. But what you just said is so true. A lot of people, most people, I think, don't believe that they can say no. They think they have to consent. They don't see a request from a police officer as a request. They see it as a demand, even if it's being asked, because police are in a position of authority. And sometimes when they ask, they don't ask so nicely, and people are afraid and they think that they can't say no.
Yeah, I think that's totally true. I mean, before I went to law school, I didn't feel like I could say no. I didn't even feel like it was a question. I felt like it was a demand. So that's the basics of the amendment. What do you feel like people misunderstand most about the prohibition against unreasonable search and seizure?
I think the main thing they misunderstand is that to the extent people think there has to be a warrant, people think that police officers always have to have a warrant, when in reality, it's only a few instances in which they have to have a warrant to either search or to seize. So this whole notion of searches and seizures, you're talking about searching property or searching people, seizing property or seizing people. So when you're talking about seizing a person, you're really talking about there's a lot of different ways police officers can do that. So if a police officer just comes up to you and says, hey, you know, can I talk to you? You can say no, and you can simply walk away, according to the Supreme Court. You don't have to stay there. But if they want to force you to stay there, forcibly detain you, they have to have what's called reasonable suspicion, which is a really low standard, a reasonable suspicion to believe that you're involved in some criminal behavior. They have to have that in order to forcibly detain you, to ask you questions, investigate further. And if they want to frisk you, they have to have reasonable suspicion to believe that you're armed and dangerous. So you've heard of stop and frisk.
Right.
That's from a case called Terry versus Ohio. And so the court said that if a police officer has reasonable suspicion to believe that crime is afoot, they can stop that person temporarily. It's not like an arrest. They can't take you in, but they can stop you temporarily, talk to you, ask you questions to try to determine whether you're involved in some criminal behavior. And if they believe, if reasonable suspicion to believe that you're armed and dangerous, they can do a frisk, which is basically a pat down of your outer clothing, a flat hand pat down of your outer clothing. You can't go inside your clothing. And if by doing that pat down, they feel something that feels like a weapon, a knife or a gun or anything that can be used as a weapon, they can actually reach inside and remove it. And then by that time, they may have developed what's called probable cause, which is a little bit higher of a standard. That then will allow them to arrest you. And that's the more permanent kind of seizure where they can actually take you in and arrest you for a crime. So there are a lot of different levels of seizures under the Fourth Amendment.
But how, I know that this is your particular area of expertise. That all sounds well and good, but how does that play in the real world, especially with regards to issues of racial justice and racial profiling?
Yeah, so I'm glad you asked that question. Reasonable suspicion is such a low standard that it's very easy for police officers to stop a person forcibly. And so this issue, so it really has permitted police officers to engage in racial profiling, which is basically police officers stopping a person not because they have reasonable suspicion to believe they're involved in crime, but they're stopping them based on race. They look at, you know, see a group of young black men or boys standing on a street corner. You know, maybe they're just there chatting, talking. They look at them, they see a black boy or a black man, and they immediately think criminal, even if they're not doing anything obvious, right? They may see a group of white kids standing on a street corner and see them there hanging out, having fun. They see a group of black boys doing the same thing. They're thinking, oh, they're up to no good. And so that's where the racial profiling comes in. And it really, it has become such a pervasive problem. And unfortunately, because the Supreme Court has allowed this low standard, it really permits police officers to do this. Now, of course, it is unconstitutional to discriminate against a person based on race. That goes to the Equal Protection Clause, right? You can't treat people differently based on race. You can't discriminate. But the Supreme Court, in a series of cases, has made it very difficult to prove discrimination. You have to prove that the police officer intended to stop you because you're black, not for some other reason. And because they can always come up with some other reason, they can hide or mask the true reason, which is that it's because you're black. And a lot of times, you know, a lot of times it's honestly, I think with some officers, it's even, I think, subconscious, right? It's what we call implicit bias.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah.
And how are you going to prove that if they don't even believe it?
Exactly. You really can't. There are no legal remedies for that. That's the problem. I mean, you even have black police officers who are doing it, right? They have this bias as well. And I think, you know, all of us suffer from implicit bias, right? These unconscious views that we have about people based on not just race, but skin color, body type, body size, gender, sexual orientation. We all suffer from those implicit biases. But the problem is that when a person in a position of power, like a police officer, is acting on that implicit bias to take away a person's freedom, that's when it has even more serious implications. And so the only case I'm aware of where someone has successfully challenged racial profiling is a case out of New York City called the Floyd case, Floyd versus New York. And it's an extraordinary case decided a number of years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, where the Center for Constitutional Rights basically made a case, and they actually, because they had extraordinary evidence, they actually had some police officers who were sort of whistleblowers and undercover, recorded their supervisors telling them, you know who to stop, basically telling them to stop black and brown people. And so they made this case, it was class action, and they actually won. It's an extraordinary case. But that's the only case I'm aware of because they had explicit evidence that it was being done based on race. And usually you're not going to have that kind of evidence. So it really allows, unfortunately, this pervasive practice of racial profiling to go on. And of course, so many of these cases of racial profiling have had some pretty catastrophic results where police officers start out stopping the person, and then it escalates. And, you know, in recent years, we've heard so much about young black men and boys, unarmed black men and boys being killed by police officers. Many of those instances started, in my view, with racial profiling.
We're finally at my favorite time of year. Spring is here. Summer is just around the corner. We're getting our summer essentials ready, our sunscreen, our emotional support water bottles, our steamy beach reads. But maybe you would prefer your steamy earbuds. This year, there is a new kind of essential right at your fingertips. Enemies to Love chance encounters, a slow burn, friends that become more. Whatever your favorite romantic trope, Dipsy has a spicy audio story just for you. Dipsy is an app full of hundreds of short and spicy audio stories that bring scenarios to life with immersive soundscapes and realistic characters. You can discover stories about second chance romances and adventurous vacation flings. That's my favorite. Hot and heavy hookups. It can be as heavy or as light as you want it to be. This is what I love about Dipsy. It is a modern approach to romance through high quality, captivating audio fiction that you can listen to in the privacy of your own headphones. For listeners of the show, Dipsy is offering an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/pantsuit. That's 30 days of full access for free when you go to dipseastories.com/pantsuit. That's dipsystories.com/pantsuit.
Traditionally, financial planning advice is either only for those who are already wealthy or salespeople calling themselves financial advisors who say they'll give you free financial advice but really just sell products to earn commissions. Fearless Finance takes a dramatic departure from either of those traditional models. Their entire business is built on making financial advice accessible and affordable because we know that financial literacy, stress reduction, and financial security are critical to overall well-being. I'm a little bit obsessed with Elizabeth, our Fearless Finance advisor. I've had an array of advisors in the past who answered questions like, should we be spending less on this, with evasive answers like, it depends on your priorities. Not Elizabeth. She answers with actually helpful guidelines. You're spending more than the average family of five, or I'd like to see this increase by 6%. Thank you. This is Fearless Finance's mission, to make advice affordable and accessible. You meet with your planner virtually and they charge you by the hour. You only pay for the time you use down to a quarter hour. Their planners meet with you where you are on your financial journey, no judgment. Visit fearlessfinance.com today. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit, and you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use the code PANTSUIT. That's fearlessfinance.com and use code PANTSUIT for $50 off your first planning meeting. I recently reorganized my closet and realized that I never need to buy a white blouse or a blue dress again as long as I live. Guys, I have plenty. I did want to add some much neglected color, like pink and yellow, to my closet, and I knew just where to go. Quince always has timeless pieces and a true rainbow of options that can help you build a classic wardrobe no matter the season. It's getting warmer, so I got a soft pink chiffon pleated miniskirt that is so cute, and a really beautiful yellow cashmere tee. It's short-sleeved, it's perfect for the sort of bridge weather we're experiencing right now. And the best part is all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I absolutely love it. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/pantsuit for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/pantsuit to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/pantsuit. Okay, let's move on to the Fifth Amendment. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia when in actual service in time of war or public danger. Nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. So there's a lot in there, but we're not going to worry too much about all the stuff about the grand jury, especially the land or naval or militia. We want to pay attention to, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. So how has that played out in constitutional law?
Yeah, so a lot there, as you pointed out, right? There's the, you know, double jeopardy clause, you know, the right to have a grand jury. The one that I think most people, that's most relevant anyway for criminal law and criminal procedure, is the privilege against self-incrimination. Nor shall any person be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself.
The famous movie moment where people always take the Fifth Amendment.
The Fifth Amendment, we always hear about people saying, I plead the Fifth. And people say it jokingly when they're talking to their friends and they don't want to say something, they say, I plead the Fifth. That's what they're talking about. They're actually talking about the Fifth Amendment. But basically, what it's all about is that, you know, in this country, we say that if the government is going to take away a person's liberty, the burden of proof is on the government. They have to prove. We don't require people to come into court and prove their innocence. They're presumed to be innocent, and the government has to prove their guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. So for that reason, that individual should not be compelled to be a witness against himself, because it's not their burden to do that. And it's also the important part of that is, nor shall that person be compelled to be a witness against himself. And what that means is the government can't force you to talk. I mean, we don't live in a society, well, we shouldn't live in a society. I guess we can think of examples where this has been violated, but we don't live in a society where, you know, we torture people to make them talk. Now, of course, we've heard that that's happened a lot in the national security realm, you know, and Guantanamo and all of that. But in criminal cases, it's against the law. It's a violation of the Constitution, specifically the Fifth Amendment, for police officer to try to force a person to talk. And that can come in many different ways, right? So in modern days, we don't hear that many cases, if any, of police officers beating a person until they talk. I mean, it happens. There's no question but that it happens. But a lot of times they will use psychological techniques against an individual and other techniques to compel that person. So, for example, if they hold a suspect for hours and hours without food or drink, or they have police officers who are tricking them into talking, lying to them, saying things to them that are to try to break them down and make them talk. There are all kinds of examples of that. There are modern ways of police officers doing that. And that's in violation, should be a violation of the Fifth Amendment, because it's about forcing a person to talk. And so that's really what this is all about. Like, the person cannot be forced to talk. And the other thing that's developed from it, the other case that has developed from it, is Miranda. A lot of people have heard about Miranda rights. We hear it on TV of police officers reading people their Miranda rights. You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to have an attorney. If you can't afford one, one will be provided for you. Those rights come out of this case called Miranda versus Arizona. It's not in the text of the Fifth Amendment, but the Supreme Court has interpreted Miranda to be a constitutional right. That is, police officers, before they question a person, if they have a person in custody, and those are the two requirements, if the person's in custody and they're being questioned, police officers must read them their Miranda rights before that questioning happens. And so, you know, if a person's rights are not read to them, or they're not read thoroughly to them, or if they choose not to waive their rights and police officers question them anyway, or that's a violation of the Fifth Amendment. So there are two issues. Is it a voluntary statement, right? Was it given freely, or did they compel me? Did they force me to speak? That's a violation. And the second was, did they read me my Miranda rights? Did I waive them? If I waived them, was that waiver a free, voluntary, intelligent waiver, or did they force me to waive them? So there are a lot of issues there, but it has to do with police questioning. And, of course, it also goes into the courtroom. A person is not compelled to testify. So when you see trials, you know, the burden of proof is on the government. The defendant doesn't have to testify. They're not required to testify. They're not required to put on any evidence. They can simply sit there and force the government to prove their guilt beyond a reasonable doubt and just have their lawyers cross-examine the government's witnesses. If they choose to testify, they can, but they can't be forced to. Why? Because of the Fifth Amendment. They can't be forced to. So a good example is, you know, the O.J. Simpson case, which is, you know, I use that case all the time because there's all kinds of lessons to be learned from that case, right? There's all kinds of examples that I use it from that case in many of my classes that I teach. But so when he went to trial in his criminal case, right, he did not testify. He couldn't be forced to testify. He was found not guilty. But he was sued by the families. And there he did have to testify. Why? Because it's a civil case, and they had to have depositions and interrogatories, and he had to answer those, right? So it's very different whether it's criminal or civil. It can't be forced in a criminal case, and that's all because of the Fifth Amendment.
Now, I do want, before we move on to the Sixth Amendment, I think there's another thing some people maybe don't understand or doesn't seem right. And I think it's a really good point to just take a minute and explain, which is, let's say that police officers either in searching you or questioning you or failing to read your Miranda rights, that they make a mistake and they violate your constitutional rights. So there's a principle called fruit of the poisonous tree, where if you the evidence that they gathered after they violated your rights is thrown out. Can you explain that? I mean, it's sort of like our enforcement power. I think it's really important to understand that point, because I think some people are like, well, if they did it and the evidence shows they did, why would you throw the evidence out?
Right. So glad you raised that. So there's nothing in either the Fourth Amendment or the Fifth Amendment that provides a remedy if the cops violate your rights. It just says they can't do it, but it doesn't say what, if anything, happens to them if they violate your rights. So there's something called the exclusionary rule that courts have developed, which basically says that if police officers, let's go back to the Fourth Amendment for a minute. Let's say they break into your house without a warrant. There's no exception to the warrant requirement, and they see some drugs and you're charged with possessing those drugs. Well, if they violated your rights, the remedy you get is that the drugs are thrown out of court. In other words, the government is not allowed to use those drugs in a criminal trial against you. And if they can't use the drugs, then they can't make out their case, and the case ends up being dismissed. And the reason for that is there has to be some kind of remedy to deter police officers from doing it again, right? If there's no remedy, then they're just going to keep violating your rights. Now, there are plenty of people who argue, and I get their point, is that that's not really a great remedy because nothing really happens to the cops themselves.
Right.
I mean, the case gets thrown out, but is that really going to deter police officers? Why don't we do something else? Why don't we punish police officers? Why don't we prosecute them? Well, those are all suggestions that have been made by scholars and others, but to date, the exclusionary rule remains the remedy. Same thing with the Fifth Amendment. Your statement, if it's taken in violation of the Fifth Amendment, either because the police officers beat it out of you or because they did not read you your Miranda rights, the remedy generally is that your statement may not be used against you in your trial. Right? They can use other evidence, but if you confess, that confession cannot be introduced in your trial. The jury will never hear about it. And the reason for that, again, is that there has to be some remedy to deter police officers from engaging in that unconstitutional behavior in the future. Again, I think there's an argument to be made that maybe it's not the most effective remedy. Maybe there should be some other punishment of the officers themselves that might be more effective, but so far the exclusionary rule is the remedy that courts have recognized. And here I should say this also. Let me just make one other point about that. So what happens if it's because what happens if your Fourth Amendment rights are violated, but you end up not being arrested? So let's say the cops break into my house and tear my house up just looking for drugs, and they didn't have a warrant, and so they violated the Fourth Amendment, and they don't find anything. So then what happens? So there's nothing to be excluded from a trial because there's no trial because I'm not arrested. So that's when you have to sue, and there's a lot of different ways you can file a lawsuit, but that's hard. There could be some state law, state statute that you could use. There's a federal law called Section 1983. But it's very difficult for one thing. You know, you got to hire a lawyer and find a lawyer who's going to want to take the case. And if there are not a lot of damages done where they don't think there's going to be a big settlement, they may not take the case, you know.
Right.
So it's a lot more difficult when you're – and interestingly enough, I won't say it's more difficult. I'll say it is difficult. If you are an innocent person who's not charged with a crime, it's still hard, right, to sort of get a remedy if your Fourth or Fifth Amendment rights are violated.
Listen, y'all, let's be serious. I'm 42 years old. Of course, I take my skincare routine seriously. There are a lot of daily skincare products on the market claiming to help reduce fine lines and wrinkles, but how do you know your products are actually working? Well, Ritual is here for you. They have Hyacera, their once-daily skin supplement, clinically proven to reduce wrinkles and fine lines and increase skin smoothness in 90 days. They conducted a clinical study, and it led to a 3.6 times reduction in crow's feet within 90 days as compared to a placebo, and a 2.9 times increase in skin smoothness within 90 days as compared to a placebo. I love taking my Hyacera every day as part of my skincare routine instead of just slathering more products on my face. It feels like I'm doing something from the inside out.
And their one daily capsule is essenced with soothing vanilla, so it's a very pleasant experience. Start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on clean science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/pantsuit. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/pantsuit for 25% off.
Spring is so tricky because I feel the sun shining, the earth is waking up, and I want fresh, vegetable-forward meals. And I'm running in 75 directions and don't have a lot of kitchen and prep time. Fortunately, Factor is here for me and for you with fresh, never frozen meals that are chef crafted, dietitian approved, and ready to eat in 2 minutes. They have a ton of options for us, including keto, protein plus, vegan, veggie, calorie smart, and so many add-ons. If you need help with breakfast or snacks or on-the-go lunches or beverages, Factor is here for you. Every meal I've had from Factor is so well composed, it's so flavorful, the sauces are delicious, and Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look for Earth Month Eats badges on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. Head to factormeals.com/pantsuit50 and use code pantsuit50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code pantsuit50 at factormeals.com/pantsuit50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Do you want a bra that's sexy or a bra that's comfortable? Thanks to Third Love, you can have both. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. That's why they made solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school, get smoothing you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made from premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problem solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get 15% off your order with code PODCAST15.
Right. The new season of Serial is like doing, I don't know if you're listening to it, but they're basically like camped out in the Cleveland courthouse and they're following all these different cases and all these different. And they've done such a good job, I think, of giving real world implications of this. Like they had, I mean, they have this like this police force in part of Cleveland that is just locking people up in storage rooms, basically, with no food, with no bathroom. And I mean, what's basically happening is if they go to a lawyer and say, I want to sue them, the city's like, well, we're bankrupt as a city. What are you going to sue us for? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, they don't have, even if you could find a lawyer that would want to take the case, you're suing a deadbeat city that doesn't have any money to pay out any damages based on your constitutional rights being violated.
Yep. And that's another
being
problem.
Traumatized. Jeez.
Yeah, that's another problem. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Okay, so on to the Sixth Amendment. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed by the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory processes for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. So lay out the basics of those constitutional rights for us.
Yeah, lots going on here too, most having to do with trial rights, right? The right to speedy trial, which has been interpreted as by courts as really not so speedy. I mean, it's very difficult to make that claim. The right to confront the witnesses against you, meaning that basically means that if you're at a trial, then your lawyer has a right to cross-examine those witnesses to try to show that they're not credible, et cetera, you know, to defend you. You have the right to compulsory process to obtain witnesses in your favor, so to subpoena witnesses to come to court. And then the one that is, I think, discussed the most is probably the right to have the assistance of counsel for your defense. So the court in a case called Gideon versus Wainwright basically said that even if you can't afford an attorney, you have to have an attorney appointed to you. And later cases have interpreted it to mean if you are facing 6 months or more in prison. So for minor misdemeanors, you actually don't have a constitutional right to attorney, but for anything that carries 6 months or more, the state is required to provide an attorney for you. And I have to say, you know, the promise of Gideon has not been fulfilled. We have a real crisis in indigent defense in this country. Most people charged with crimes, the vast majority of people charged with crimes are poor people. That's not to say that the vast majority of people who commit crimes are poor. It's just that the kinds of crimes that prosecutors choose to prosecute, they don't prosecute a whole lot of white-collar crimes and environmental crimes. And a lot of other crimes that cause a lot of harm to a lot of people, but they do prosecute a lot of street crimes. And the vast majority of people who are charged with those crimes are poor. And so they should be appointed attorneys. And the system of public defense in this country is a mess, really. I mean, there are some jurisdictions, some states that have really good public defender systems, like the District of Columbia has a really good system. The state of Washington has a good system. New York has a fairly good system where they're fairly well funded. They're, can hire experts and they can spend the amount of time that's necessary to represent a person in a criminal case. But there are other states like Louisiana, Missouri and others where there's an absolute crisis where you have public defenders carrying 80, 90, 100 or more cases each, where there is no way they can provide adequate representation. And it's a shame because many of these lawyers are committed. Not all public defenders are committed, but many of them are truly committed, hardworking people who really want to do a good job. But they're in offices where there are just simply not the resources available to really conduct a good, adequate defense. And so they end up counseling people on plea bargains, people like assembly line justice. We think we have this great system of trials, but really 95 to 98% of all criminal cases are resolved by way of a guilty plea. There are a lot of guilty people watch Law and Order and they think all these trials are going on. Not a lot of trials going on. Lots of guilty pleas going on because people are put in a position where you've got prosecutors who overcharge. You've got overworked public defenders who prosecutors will come and say, I'll give your guy a deal. He's got to take it today. If he doesn't take it today, the deal's off the table. The defense attorney can say, well, look, I have this ethical duty to investigate the case to see if there's a defense for my client. The prosecutor says, too bad, take it or leave it. And these poor public defenders are in the untenable position of, quote unquote, advising their clients, basically saying, this is the deal. You might have a defense. I don't know, but if you don't take the deal today, it's off the table. So, this is what's passing as justice, unfortunately, in the United States of America every day. And so we really need to do a better job of supporting our public defender systems and training public defenders and just funding. And when you think about it, public defenders don't really have, or people who are charged with crimes don't really have anybody lobbying for them in the state legislatures, right? I mean, poor people are generally not in a position to do that. And so the rest of us have to care enough about our system of justice to demand that our public defender systems be well-funded. Our justice system is supposed to work. It's an adversarial system where we have, a well-funded, well-trained prosecution and a well-funded and well-trained defense. And then we have a judge, who's presiding over it. But if both sides are not funded well or not trained well, then we're not getting justice in our criminal justice system. And we're not today. We aren't. And so we really need to do a better job of that. All of us, all citizens should care about this issue because, there before the grace of God go I, is the saying, right? You never know when you or a member of your family is going to be in that position. So we need to all care about our justice system and care that it works in a way that's fair and just for everyone.
I think that is a perfect note to end on. I think looking at the Constitution as not set in stone with flaws that are not serving the entirety of our population and understanding that something that doesn't serve the entirety of population is a risk to all of us.
Yep. I couldn't agree more.
Well, thank you so much, Professor Davis, for coming on our show. It's been so incredibly helpful.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Dylan Garvin produces Pantsuit Politics every week. Thanks for making us sound better, Dylan.
Elise Knapp is our managing director, which means we could not make it without her scheduling, organization, feedback, and creativity. Thank you, Elise.
We couldn't make Pantsuit Politics without support from our listeners. Go to patreon.com/pantsuitpolitics to learn how you can receive more nuance and help us make the show.
Special thanks to our executive producers who have committed to supporting us in a major life-giving way. Tracy Putoff, Tim Miller, Cherry Haas, Sarah's husband Nicholas Holland, and my husband Chad Silvers.
Special thanks to Elise Knapp for narrating these special intros and to Dylan Garvin and Studio D Podcast Production for music and sound design. Learn more about our lives, live events that we're involved in, and what we're reading each week by signing up for our weekly newsletter at pantsuitpoliticsshow.com.
And connect with members of the Pantsuit Politics community by following us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.